You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast. This week, part two in the series in partnership with Glanbia, the global nutrition group. In these podcasts, we explore a huge range of crucial issues and exciting developments in the food industry with brilliant guests drawn from all areas of expertise. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer specializing in food and science. Now, the title of this podcast is Trends and Insight in Nutrition Bars, and we're going to explore the extraordinary evolution of nutrition bars and the technical challenges of making them. And we're also going to explore their future within the whole context of healthy snacking. We're joined by four fantastic guests from Glanbia: Paul O'Mahony, Product Strategic Manager, EMEA.
Hi, everyone.
Brad Myers, Senior Director, Product Strategic Management.
Hello.
Max Maxwell, Market Intelligence Manager, Healthy Snacking.
Greetings to you all.
And Jason Demerly, Director of Research, Global Ingredients.
Greetings.
Brad, can you give us a sense of the market across the globe and which countries have taken up nutrition bars more than others? You know, which are the most interesting markets for you?
The U.S. is far and away the largest market for protein, well, for bars in general, but particularly the high protein set. So the U.S. Right now is probably around a $6 billion market as far as the published data for bars, but the scanned retail data only gives you part of the piece. It doesn't give you the MLMs. It doesn't give you the online sales. It doesn't give you a lot of the club channels. So, you know, we estimate that the total bar market in the U.S. Might be closer to $9 billion in terms of retail sale. After that, the number two, which is significantly lower than the number one, but still very big and relevant and growing, would be Western Europe with the difference being that it's a little bit more of a patchwork. So you've got a market like the UK or Germany, for instance, where protein bars are huge and growing at a very fast rate. And then you've got a market like France, where, you know, short of one or two stores, you can't find a protein bar there. And then you've got markets like Italy that are somewhere in between. So Europe in its entirety, I would say, would be the number two market in the world, and it's certainly growing fast. We think of Europe, at least over here, in terms of where the consumer behaviors are, where the trends are, where the technologies are, is, you know, maybe about 5 or 10 years behind where the U.S. is in terms of protein bars. But the interesting piece is they're catching up faster. So we don't expect it to take that same journey, you know, that took a couple decades in the U.S. to get there. That development cycle is a lot shorter. And then what's very interesting is on the other end of the spectrum is you have the emerging markets. Paul already alluded to India. That is one of the actually largest emerging markets for protein consumption in general. But right now, the protein consumption there is really more focused in the ready-to-mix powders. So, you know, the tub of protein where you scoop and you mix it with some liquid. But bars are starting to scale there. And then Asia as well. If we were having this conversation 3 years ago about China, we'd say there isn't a protein bar market there. Today, there is one, and it's growing fast. We worked with a brand recently that just did a launch on TikTok with a big influencer there. Excuse me, and on the first day of the launch, they sold 300,000 bars, which by U.S. standards is not that exciting. But in China, I mean, that's amazing that they sold that many bars on day one. So we really believe that these emerging markets, whether it be a market like China or Japan, is another one in the Asia Pacific where protein bars are growing, as well as India. Those are really going to catch up to the rest of the world. But right now, in terms of today, if you look at the numbers, the U.S. is far and away the most important market for protein bars in the world.
And Max, looking at this concept of the global market, how has your approach to developing solutions evolved with market? I mean, as well as the people buying the products, presumably you're sourcing the ingredients from different markets as well. Is that important to the solutions that you develop?
I think that is important, and I think that I'm going to defer to Brad on that question, but I want to jump on the evolution part before I turn it over to him, if that's okay, because one of the evolving things that's happening is, you know, protein has been very appreciated in bars, but not in very many other of the healthy snacks. And we're finding that starting to happen, crossing over into cookies, crossing over even into ice cream and frozen desserts.
And do you think that's because of expectations of texture shifting? Or
I think people want their food to be healthier. And as several of us have talked about, protein is just a signal to people that food is healthier, and they know that it's going to be good for them. And so that's why they're interested in doing that. It's even going into baking mixes. There's a frozen waffle brand here that crested 100 million Kodiak in terms of frozen waffles and other products like that that were enriched with protein. There's the whole question of whether it'll emerge into chips. There's extruded snacks and cereals. And again, Brad knows a lot more about that than I do, so he could talk to your question, original question, as well as that. But I think those are really important trends in terms of what's happening, you know, in the evolution of actually the snack bar to the protein bar to the protein snack to the healthy snack.
Yeah. So Brad, can you shed a bit of extra light on this, on the market for ingredients as well as the market for the bars?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, at its core, Glanbia Nutritionals is an ingredient company. You know, our goal is to develop ingredients and particularly solutions that meet the needs of our customers, and our customers are brands. But, you know, those brands have an end customer, which is the consumer, right? So we do a lot of work with the consumer in mind. But the ingredient landscape has changed quite a bit. I mean, Jason alluded to this earlier in terms of syrup systems changing in bars, for instance. So, you know, back when this started in the early 90s, maybe it was okay to use a sugar syrup in your bar. Then people wanted to reduce sugar. So you move to a sugar alcohol like a maltitol or a sorbitol, an ingredient like that. And that's great. Zero sugar, you know, it's healthier. And then you had this clean label movement that's really happened where people want ingredients that they can understand, that maybe they can find, you know, in the pantry in their own kitchen. So we've moved away from the sugar alcohols to products like fiber syrups. And those create different technical challenges that, again, Jason alluded to. There's things like water activity, which will promote spoilage in a bar. So if you're using a sugar-based syrup, you're not going to have those kind of problems. But if you use a fiber syrup, you're going to be driving up the water activity. So what do you do to solve that? And then those also create textural challenges. And that's where we come into play with our proteins. We're the largest producer of whey protein isolates in the world. We have scale. And to Jason's point, we have decades of expertise. So we literally can go back to scratch with the chemistry and design a protein that is going to meet the need of the product, the end product we have in mind, based on the other ingredient interactions. But more interestingly to me, and getting more towards your question, meeting the needs of a specific market or geography. So I'll give you an example there. To Jason's point earlier about if you go into a market like China or Japan in terms of texture preferences, there's a lot of differences between those two markets in a lot of other areas, but in terms of texture preference, it's the same. They both prefer what we would call a shorter texture bar. So when we talk about long texture, you think really chewy. I talk about taffy versus toffee. So taffy is going to be your really long texture. Toffee, your really brittle, kind of break it apart, shorter, drier texture. So we actually developed a brand new range of proteins when we decided we want to launch into the market in China to try to deliver this shorter texture as well as meet the price expectation for the market. In the US, it's a very developed market. Protein has been here for a while. People will pay the premium for an isolate, which is a higher protein delivery. There's more protein in an isolate than there is in a concentrate. But in a market where protein doesn't exist, period, the consumer doesn't care if it's a concentrate or an isolate. They just want protein. But maybe they're not ready to make that leap to a premium position product. We talk about this a lot when we're thinking about these emerging spaces that Max alluded to. You know, is somebody going to pay $2.50 for a bag of potato chips that are high protein when they can buy a regular one for 25 cents or maybe 50 cents. Intuitively, you would say no. But if you go back in time 20 years ago and say, hey, I've got this bar, I want to sell it for $2, people would say you're crazy. A granola bar costs a quarter. Why is anyone going to pay $2 for this? So you can't make that leap to that super premium price position overnight, but the market will evolve to get there. And we're in this unique position, being basic in the ingredient manufacturer and having the application expertise in terms of how to deliver those ingredients to a finished bar, that we can start kind of at the drawing board, if you will, and design products that are going to meet the functionality, the texture, as well as the price expectations for a given market.
So this is really fascinating. So let's pitch a scenario here. So Paul, I've got my brand Gastronaut. I quite fancy making a few million quid out of it. And I'd like to develop a bar, a nutritional bar that has lots of nice health claims and possibly aimed at kids. I come to meet you to discuss it. You're going to send me home saying, you fool, this is what you need to think about. What? Give me the 60-second smack around the ear that you'd tell me so that I know what I should really come to you with. What should I consider when thinking about developing a bar?
I think, first of all, consider your market and your customer, who are you actually selling to. I think that's really, really important. Also, the texture and what type of bar you actually want, depending on your target market. What do you want? What do you want to position that with your consumer? What they're going to use it for, the occasion on which they're going to use those bars is also very, very important. That'll determine impact the nutritional profile, whether it's an energy bar, protein bar, for exercise, for cycling, for gym, for indulgence as another category that we've also spoken about. So when you've got all that sort of figured out, and we can help you through that because we've got a consumer insights team that will help you figure that aspect out, who your consumer is, what type of bar they may or may want, what occasion they're going to use it for. Once you figure that bit out, we'll take that as a brief. We'll look at that. We'll take the idea. We'll take it back to R&D. We'll work it through from brief to concept. We'll get you a concept. We'll work through the price point with you. And then having refined that concept, you go through the tasting, which is absolutely number one. What does that bar taste like? Is it actually what you want for your consumer? And when we've got that done, we will actually further refine the prototype, make a larger scale sample for you, and then take you on the journey of contract manufacture, and refining the bar slightly with the contract manufacturer. So almost through the whole commercial journey, Stefan, of your concept idea to concept to launch to the positioning of the bar in that market. And then layered over all of that, and we've mentioned this already, that could just be for the European market. If you want to also take that brand on a journey to America or Asia, we've got the same know-how R&D sites that will help you take that bar on an internationalization journey as well, if that's something that you want to do. And quite a few brands actually want to do that, particularly if they have success in their local market. And I think that's where we add something unique, that we can take that brand on that international journey, which I think adds value to the customer as well.
Yeah. And do you think that we can get this done by Friday? Because I could really do a couple of million. This TV
we could actually do it for you within 24 hours if that's what you want. You
no, but seriously, no problem. Are we talking a year, 2 years sort of development period, or is it all just it depends on the product?
In truth, it really depends on the complexity. Starting back from the complexity of the brief. And in truth, that can be 3 months, 6 months would probably be, in my view, a typical concept idea to launch. Sometimes it may take longer, and it is a journey. You know, so the complexity of the brief is absolutely one part of it. But from our perspective, we think the value that we add is, if you've got that idea, we'll take you into R&D. We'll work with you over 2 or 3 days. You can sleep overnight, stay in the lab overnight if you want to. We'll cocoon you and get you leaving that lab with a concept that you can then take. And Brad alluded to this, the speed of innovation is so fast now. You know, people don't want to wait for 6 months to have a concept. They want to work.
Because also that costs money as well.
It does cost money, and you know, time is money in this, and you know, four to five major new brand bar launches in the UK did not exist 5 years ago. So there's a lot of innovative brands coming to market, and they're innovating at a really fast pace. And where we really understand that, that's why we want to bring you in, want to work with you, want to cocoon you, is a popular word now as well, cocooning, but take you in for a number of years and get you to leave.
No one's done an audio bar to my knowledge, so you might want to think about that.
I love the sound of that. So Jason,
that's what we do.
What are your customers asking for now that they weren't asking for 5 years ago? Are they asking for different taste, different story behind the bar, different health benefits? Does it need to be cool? Does it need to say something? What are you being requested?
Yeah, I mean it's across the board with bars. I mean it's usually it's flavor and texture, but I think what we're seeing more of is kind of return to some of the culinary roots and some different, maybe even some different platforms versus the bar. And I think, you know, as Brad mentioned, I mean, these areas that are growing are in bars are outside the U.S. and there's a lot of excitement happening in Europe and in Asia and whatnot. But, you know, we're seeing an increased demand for different platforms like, you know, the cookies or different snacks or savory type items. And so it creates some different challenges for us. And we've been, you know, working on solutions and ways to come, you know, tackle some of those challenges. And it's a lot of fun, but it's similar to what's been happening in the bar world. And so we're seeing just a different spin on bars, meaning, you know, they want to see the cookie or they want to see a chip or some other format that's a high protein format, because the protein trend is definitely, it's here to stay. It's a long-term trend. It's not going away. People understand the importance of getting enough protein in the diet, but the U.S. consumer, I mean, there's a lot of bars on the market now and a lot of different brands on the market. And so it is becoming increasingly difficult for you, at least in the U.S. market, to differentiate yourself from what's out there.
I would add to that, one trend I'm seeing is I describe it as indulgent vegan. So vegan, we all for sure know, is on trend, but you know, vegan shouldn't be just okay. Or there may be a mindset, well, vegan, if you're vegan, you should suffer maybe a little, or shouldn't taste great. And that's like the penalty you get for being vegan. That's no longer acceptable anymore. You know, I equate it to gluten-free products or celiac. Those breads or those products were not great years ago. Now they taste really good. So the indulgent vegan should also be able to have products that taste really good, are almost indulgent, and that definitely is a challenge. But Glanbia, you know, we're looking at that as well and want to make those vegan products and the proteins, whether it's pea protein, whatever, behave in a really great way. So you're not almost really not tasting that difference, and you're getting the equivalent texture and taste that you're looking for. And I definitely see that as part of the future.
I think the key thing that for me nailed it on the head is that point of differentiation. Bars and more broadly snacking is a very crowded category. So if you're going to be successful in that space, you need to be able to point to what's your point of differentiation. How is my product different than what else is out there? And there's a lot of ways to do that. So where your protein or your ingredients are coming from, if that's a vegan source, as Paul mentioned, that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is, where am I buying it in the store? We're starting to see a lot of bars and a lot of interest as well show up in the refrigerated case. Perfect Bar would be the biggest example. They were just acquired by Mondelez last year. That's sold in the refrigerated case. There's also some more, I would say, yogurt or cheese driven styles of bars that are popping up there. So that's another way to differentiate. And one piece that we're seeing that's really starting to emerge right now in the US, this hasn't quite hit Europe yet, to our knowledge, but it's this idea of another functional benefit. So we kind of had this light bulb when we were walking through one of these very crowded bar shelves or aisles rather in a grocery store a couple of years ago. And just looking at the messaging on every package, every bar was saying, look at me, I have this much protein. I've got 10 grams, I've got 15, I've got 20. But that's all that they were saying about their product. Now what you're starting to see is, yeah, I've got protein, but I've got something else too. I've got protein plus I've got this thing in here that's going to give you energy. Or I've got this thing over here that's going to help you have better skin. Or I've got this that's going to help you sleep. So this idea of functionality beyond just protein is one of the key emerging trends. And there's a lot of different directions you can go with that functional benefit to really give your brand a differentiated offer.
So,
well,
Brad, I think this is a really good point and a good way to round off the conversation, really, because I think it's time for a bit of future gazing, and everyone can chip in with this, really. But what's next? What's next for bars and for healthy snacking in 10 years' time? What does the nutrition bar look like? And I know that this is a foolish exercise to indulge in the future, but it's fun too. So, what do you reckon? I mean, in your wildest dreams, what would a bar look like in 10 years' time? And this is a question for all of you. Brad, do you want to start?
There's still room for improvement in terms of taste. Whether you're using, you know, dairy proteins that are quite a number of years ahead in technology than the plant proteins are. So they're already delivering a better taste just for that reason that they've had a head start. But there's still in room to improve. So I would say in 10 years' time, we should be at the point where maybe you can't really tell the difference between a protein bar and a candy bar. Side by side. We're getting close, but we're not there. That would be one piece. And then the other piece would just be format. Just to say it this way, I don't think the protein bar will be a protein bar. It's going to be something else. It's going to be an extruded snack. It's going to be a bite. It's going to be something else, some other format, but that's delivering against all of those consumer needs. Healthy, convenient, low sugar, high protein, filling, portable, delicious. Whatever that is, it's going to be a different format that's not a bar that's delivering against all of those different things that consumers are either asking for indirectly or directly.
I agree with you. I think indulgent, you know, that's going to continue. Bars tasting great. Savory bars are also going to come into play. You know, and I know we have concepts like a pizza is a pizza, but pizza bar, you know, it's a format. It's everything is different. I think that's going to be on trend. And, you know, what's the difference between a bar and a biscuit? You know, biscuits are more or less round shapes. Well, if a bar becomes a round shape, does consumers see that as a biscuit or a cake or a bite? Or, you know, so format, shape is going to change. The movement into other categories like biscuits, they're equally portable, on the move, you know. I believe all those things are going to change. Over time.
Yeah. Okay.
If we're going to go 10 years out, the wrapping will be edible.
I like the sound of that. That's awesome.
The ingredients on the inside are probably going to have some sort of mindful experience as part of the deliverable. And the other thing I do think is there will be more portable pieces, different types of the bar itself, as well as the other types of ways of delivering the protein. The other thing that I almost forgot was this whole mission, in terms of what people are trying to get across, that a lot of the bars will be tied into that.
And Jason, can you give us your prediction for 10 years in the future?
I'd kind of agree with Brad. It'll probably be more of a format change, you know, looking at extruded snacks or like what Paul mentioned, savory type bars. I think, you know, sweet, you know, is going to get you so far, but I think you appeal to a wider market if you can go savory as well. And that can come in a lot of different forms. So, you know, trying to solve the technical, functional, physical, chemical properties of working with, you know, starches, different starches and grains and trying to get high protein snacks is going to be the challenge and the next biggest thing.
Yeah.
Our insights team would probably slap us on the hand if we didn't mention this mega trend that's just in its infancy right now around ultra personalization. So I think that's an important piece here. You may have a bar that's designed for you, you know, whatever it is that you need, the vitamins and minerals you might need, or, you know, depending on what you do, are you an e-gamer? That's a huge space right now as far as consumers. You know, maybe a bar that's designed with that consumer in mind, but taking it a step further, a bar that's designed with you in mind specifically.
Yeah, nutrigenomics.
You might well plug in what you want, and the bar will be made for you at the store.
I love this. Well, awesome. These are all fantastic ideas. Well, I'd love to catch up with you all again and find out how the whole world of nutrition bars is evolving. And I think you've done a brilliant job at explaining the evolution of the industry and how it all works and what the future is as well. You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast, brought to you by Food Matters, and this week in partnership with Glambia, the global nutrition company. You heard from Paul O'Mahony, Brad Myers, Max Maxwell, and Jason Demley, and me, Stefan Gates. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts, in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from salmon farm sustainability to gut microbiome analysis. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Goodbye. You've been listening to the Tabletop Podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.